The next talk is by another local. I'm saying another local because we've had the pleasure to have Louis for one full year in Collège de France. But André-Marie Tremblay, who is our next speaker, has also been staying with us here for 1 month and given very nice lectures. So I guess this is Sherbrooke in Paris.
Okay, so thank you very much to Louis and Antoine for the invitation to speak here. I think it's quite an exciting meeting, so I'm looking forward to its continuation. So, as Louis summarized his talk at the end, so there is a phase diagram in the absence of the charge density wave and one with the charge density wave, and in both cases there's an emetic line here, and I will argue in this talk the answer I would give is that this line is a crossover line that comes from a first order transition here that is left over from the Mott transition at that filling, so it's related to Mott physics. So I will address most of these questions. I will have very little to say about charge order, because in these dynamical mean field methods, you need to allow it to see it, and we haven't. So I go rapidly on the method, and if you don't follow the method, it's okay. You can just ask questions, and we'll try to make this better. So the dynamical mean field theory maps the interacting problem onto a single site in a bat of non-interacting electrons. And that's good in infinite dimension, and it turns out d equals 3 is pretty close to infinity, but d equals 2, not. There's some momentum dependence, as we can see from from our test. So the way to move towards this is to take a cluster that is immersed in a bat, and that's the method that I will use. There's a method that is formulated in momentum space that I will show also results from this. And they are usually quite consistent, and there are some review articles. So in a more abstract way, the solution of the many-body problem corresponds to an extremum in a functional of the self-energy, where you have to allow all possible self-energies. Here, what we are doing is by changing the bat, so these are these parameters are supposed to represent the bat, is to move into subspace of all possible self-energies, which means that we don't find the true extremum, but the more variation we have in this bat, the closer we are. So the positive aspect is that we can allow for long-range order, symmetry breaking in the bat, but never on the cluster, so there's no mean field decomposition on the cluster. We include short-range dynamical and spatial correlations, but we miss the long-wavelength particle hole and particle fluctuations. They're taken into account only in a mean field way in this long-range order. So the difficult part of the problem is to solve this impurity in a bat problem. So I will use two methods here. One is exact diagonalization at zero temperature, and the other one is quantum Monte Carlo at finite temperature using a method that was invented by Philip Werner and Andy Millis, which consists in an action formalism in doing a Monte Carlo sampling to infinite order into an expansion in this hybridization function. So let's go back now to reality, or at least physical pictures. So let's remind ourselves what we mean by Mott physics, and the easiest way is to start from F-filling. So at F-filling, we know the phase diagram. Let's take a three-dimensional cubic lattice. We draw temperature as a function of interaction strength. We know the ground state is an antiferromagnet and that the Néel temperature goes up and down like this. On this side, we say that the antiferromagnetism comes in from Slater physics, from nesting. On this side, we have local moments and a Heisenberg model. So we have to go from this region where there's Fermi surface to here where there's no Fermi surface. So this is a quite non-trivial crossover, and that's what we call the Mott phenomenon. So one, the dynamical mean field theory way of understanding this, all these crossovers, is to remove the long-range ordered phase and look at some state that is metastable, if you want.
And what you find in normal state is that there's a first order transition at finite temperature that ends at the critical point. And it turns out that in, for example, the BEDT organics that are very frustrated, the antifermentism does disappear, and you do see this critical point and this first order transition. So there are examples where you see this effect, but the point is that even if you don't see it because of some long-range order, the crossover is described by this physics. Now let's dope the Mott insulator, and we start with the normal state. A number of papers using these type of methods by all the groups involved in at Rutgers, at Columbia, here in Paris, in Louisiana now. So many groups, we all find that there's an anomalous metallic state near F-filling. It's been known for about 10 years. And the simplest calculation that gives this is just a two-side calculation that was performed here in Paris, where you see the evolution of the ARPES spectrum from a standard Fermi surface to one that has this momentum differentiation between antinodal and nodal directions. And this has been seen as with bigger clusters and everything, but the point is that the physics here of the pseudo-gap is the physics of singlets. So here I present the work of Giovanni and Christian. And it takes into account the lesson from dynamical mean field theory, namely that there's a first order transition and a critical point that governs the crossovers and the phase diagram. So what happens at finite doping? Well, a first order transition was seen at positive T prime by several groups. Here, for reasons of sign problem, I will be looking at T prime equals zero and see if we do have a phase transition again, like we did at F filling. So here is the evidence. So I draw filling as a function of chemical potential. At high temperature, you just have this blue line that is doing nothing, very interesting. At low temperature, so let's take 1 over 50, this red line shows that here I'm moving in the Mott gap, that's why the density stays fixed at 1, the filling stays fixed at 1. I enter a phase that's highly compressible, and then there's a first order jump with hysteresis into another metallic phase. And you see there's a region here where there's no solution, no density, no at this chemical potential, there's no density. There's either that one or that one, but nothing in between. So to draw a phase diagram, you take this red curve, for example, and you put what the Mott gap is. So that's temperature as a function of chemical potential. There's a phase, that's the forbidden region, and then there's the other metallic phase. Now take this at different values of U. And so you can draw the three-dimensional phase diagram just by, you know, what I just showed is this is in this plane now, this yellow and blue plane. And now you do various value of U with increasing U. And what you find, and that's the important observation, is that the first order transition ends at a critical point that is continuously connected to the Mott critical point at F filling. So the point is that the physics that we will see here is a signature of the Mott transition at finite doping. The other crucial observation is that this critical point goes down like mad with increasing U. So in our calculations at the U large, we see crossovers, but we don't see the first order transition anymore. So is it still there? Is it become something quantum critical? We can't tell, but the crossovers are still there. So the results I will show are like this. So now I'm plotting doping, interaction strength. The Mott transition at zero doping is at some value of U. And this is this first order transition that I will call the Sordi transition that separates the pseudo gap and the metal. And as you see, as we increase U, it moves towards 10 or 12% doping. Now I will show results for very close to the transition for the reasons I just told you that to see the first order transition, you need to be close to the Mott transition. So this is the temperature doping plane now. This is the first order transition I was talking about. And the question is, what happens to the crossovers? How can we describe these crossovers? So in the same way that Steve appealed to general principles of statistical mechanics, I will do the same thing and say that if there's a first order transition and a critical point, there's a Widom line. And the Widom line is what? Well, let's look at the pressure temperature plane for a simple liquid gas transition. So in simple liquid gas transition, you have a first order transition. It ends at a critical point. And if you go above, so this is a gas and liquid, if you go above the critical point, there's some sort of continuation. That's not a phase transition. But if you look at the thermodynamic quantities like the specific heat, for example, it will have a maximum as you cross this this line. If you look at a dynamic quantity, like for example, the viscosity, it will have a rapid crossover from a gas-like to a liquid-like behavior as you cross this line. So rigorously, it is a continuation of the, it's the line where the maximum of the different response function join as you reach the critical point. So what is the Widom line in our case? I go back to, I'm sorry, moving into these different planes, but this is temperature, chemical potential. That's the first thing I showed. So there's the Mott insulator, the pseudo gap, and this correlated liquid, and the first order transition. If I look at the compressibility now, dN dμ at high temperature, that's the black line. You see it's independent of chemical potential, so I have nothing to report. But as you decrease the temperature, there's a maximum. And you can plot the locus of this maximum and find that as you get to the critical point, this is the blue line here, this is a log plot, so you see the compressibility is hugely enhanced. In fact, it should diverge as you hit the critical point, and that was seen also at that filling by Gabby many years ago. Now, if you look at the density of states, let's look at all the crossovers now, not just this thermodynamic crossover, but other ones. So this is the the black. So what I'm doing here is crossing as a function of doping this line. So starting from F filling, moving this way. So this is the Mott transition, the Mott gap. If I dope just a little bit, like let's say 1% doping, you see a pseudo gap. That's this thing here, that the density of states is depressed, and it's extremely anisotropic. If you plot the density of states at the Fermi level as a function of doping, you see an inflection point. You draw this inflection point as the green symbols here, and you find they fall on this Widom line. And this is a result from Seamus Davis that showed this very big anisotropy. Now, let's look at the spin susceptibility, the night shift, that's sort of the defining feature of what is the pseudo gap. So at half filling, it drops. And if you go, let's say, at 2% filling, the green line, you see a similar drop. And if you plot the inflection points of this spin susceptibility, that's the magenta points here, and they fall again on this Widom line. Now, this is the result of experiments, but there are very early ones by Henri Alloul in 1988. It was sort of first indications that there was a pseudo gap physics. So what is the physics of this pseudo gap then? Well, this Monte Carlo, you can sample the states on the plaquette. And what you find is that when you enter the pseudo gap, let's take here the probability that we have the ground state is the D wave singlet. So if you plot this probability as a function of temperature, let's say for 2% doping, the green line again, you see an inflection point, and you see that you have 60% of the probabilities to be in this singlet state.
Has it four state, four electrons?
This is the singlet state has four electrons.
This is four electrons on a 2x2.
Yeah. So if you look at the if you draw the susceptibility again, I mean the inflection point, it falls on this line. Now let's go back to the spin susceptibility for a moment. Traditionally, the onset of T star has been defined as where this starts to drop. So if we do that, there are two lines. There's this inflection point, and then there is this this onset. Well, this onset is seen also in other quantities, like it's sort of a precursor, if you want, of this inflection. If we look at resistivity, for example, if you're on the right-hand side of the first-order transition, you just the C-axis resistivity is just monotonic with temperature. This corresponds to C-axis resistivity as a function of temperature is plotted on this axis. And indeed, it just goes up monotonically. If you're on this side of the first-order transition, you see that it shoots up, just like the experiment does. So there are two lines, and this is prompted Henri Allul to write this paper where he claims that these very broad crossovers are a good indication that the one-band Hubbard model contains much of the physics. Now, what about the nematicity that Louis talked to us about? What is about this anisotropy? Well, remember that the normal state is an orthorhombic crystal. So if we do a calculation now with by putting in a small orthorhombicity in our calculations, and we measure this anisotropy in the conductivity along x and y direction. So this is the zero temperature calculation done in this with exact ionization. Look at U equals 4, so below the Mott transition. The anisotropy as a function of filling, so this is F filling. We see that this is the magenta curve. This is the Van Hove singularity. We have some finite T prime, and it's just a smooth function of filling. Now look at U equals 6, which is where the Mott transition is at half filling. These are the triangles, the blue triangles. You see they go there, and then when you enter the pseudo gap, the first order transition path, it shoots up. So it becomes extremely sensitive to anisotropy. Now the answer to Adrianil Paul's question is that where does it come from? It comes from anisotropy in scattering. So if you look at MDC, you see very large anisotropy in this pseudo-gap regime. And the velocity anisotropy is trivial here. And if you look at the results from Damascelli group, you see the similar anisotropies in ARPES. Now if you look at DCA 4x4, at finite temperature, these were zero temperature calculations. If you look at finite temperature, plot temperature as a function of doping. This is the color here is the size of the anisotropy in the quasi-particle renormalization. So again, it has to do with the dynamic quantity or with scattering. You see here that it's black, which means no anisotropy. And as you cross this maximum in the spin susceptibility in the night shift, so if, as you cross T star, then the anisotropy becomes huge. So this is seen at finite temperature and at zero temperature with small and with big clusters. So in summary, the picture here is that there's this, an emergent first order transition that is continuously collected to the Mott transition at half filling. This is the pseudo gap regime, which is singlet dominated. And this is a more strongly correlated, but not the pseudo gap regime. There's a maximum in the compressibility, the density of states as an inflection point and a maximum, the spin susceptibility, and the sensitivity to anisotropy is huge when you hit this line. So in summary, the signature of the Mott physics extends way beyond half filling. The pseudo gap is a phase in the same sense as gas and liquid are different phases, but they are continuously connected above this critical point. The pseudo gap T star is controlled by a Widom line and its precursor. We have a high compressibility. This is Q equals zero, not finite Q, but it may be related with stripes, but then I don't make any statement, just a suggestion. And the Widom line we see in the thermodynamics, in the transport, in the density of states. Let me finish with superconductivity now. So if you look at the zero temperature, this is the order parameter at zero temperature as a function of filling. So this is electron dope and that's hole dope. Now the point is that the antiferromagnetic phase, so that's the antiferromagnetic order parameter, which sort of jumps at you when you look at the phase diagram, is there. And it definitely competes with the superconducting order parameter, except the superconducting order parameter starts to go down even before you reach this. So if you, it would go continuously here if you didn't have the order. So in 8 site clusters, that calculations done by Andy and Olivier Parcollet and Emmanuel Goul, you see that it's not only the order parameter, but that's TC that is a dome also. And that the dome is very asymmetrical, F-filling, though this is the black line you should look at now. TC, as a, just 5 minutes, as a function of filling. And you see the black dots have this maximum, and it's very asymmetrical, like the dome showed by Louis. And if you look close to F-filling, you see there's a small region in these big clusters where there's no superconductivity. What do we see? Well, we can do all of these calculations up to U equals 16. The colors, the red dots are TC, very asymmetrical, like in the A-site clusters. The color code is the size of the order parameter. And as you see, the maximum TC goes down with U, which we know for a long time, already in calculations of Gabi in 1988, that it's related to J. Now, there's a condensation energy. I won't go through the details of this plot. But this was calculated again by Andy and motivated by experiments done in here in Paris and suggestions of Anderson a long time ago that the condensation energy comes from kinetic energy if you're close to F-filling and potential energy if you're far from F-filling. But why is the change from kinetic to potential energy at this doping? Well, in our calculation, we see, again, I don't have time, but let's not go through the details. But again, you see that in one regime, it's kinetic energy that dominates. In the other regime, it's potential energy, and it changes here. Now, at low temperatures, in our calculation, the superconductivity is defined all the way through. There's no transition. But in the normal state, there's a first-order transition. So that's why when you take the difference between normal and superconducting, you see the first-order transition. So this is not just the potential energy, but the point is that the change in potential energy giving superconductivity or hindering superconductivity occurs at this first order transition. So this is the superconducting transition temperature for U equals 6.2. And I draw the normal state here. So if it was just superconductivity, you don't see this first order transition. You don't see this rhythm line, but you just see these crossovers here above the superconducting transition temperature. But now if I plot the maximum of the order parameter, you see that it follows the rhythm line. If I plot the place where potential and kinetic energy interchange their role, they also follow the rhythm line. So the rhythm line is an organizing principle, not only for the normal state, but for the superconducting state as well. So in summary, there's an emergent phase transition. I insert that the pseudo gap is a crossover or a phase transition, depending where you look at. The origin of pneumaticity is because of the great sensitivity of these singlets to anisotropy. Why is there a dome in the superconductor? Well, it seems to be related to crossing this rhythm line, so competition with the pseudo gap phase. Why is it superconducting? It's because of J. Does a one-man model capture the key physics? Yes. Lessons from other superconductors. I hope in the discussion section you ask me questions on organics and heavy fermions, because these methods should explain other systems if they're good, not only the high TC. So is an anti-fermentic quantum critical point important? The answer is no. If we look at these systems, I could show you something. Is there a relation between the charge density wave and the pseudo gap, or why is this charge density wave peak at 12%? I have nothing to say except that it's highly compressible. So this answers Louise's question. To look at this, we would need to allow the charge density wave in the calculation. Since it's a mean field theory, the only phase diagram I can comment on is this one, where there's no charge density wave. Now, here's the speculation. So this is the charge density wave transition. This is the NMR transition seen by Marc-Henri Julien, and it's definitely related to the charge density wave. Now, let's assume that I do a very high field, high magnetic field experiment so that I remove superconductivity, and a very high pressure experiment at the same time so that I remove what a challenge. I remove the charge density wave. Could this be a first order transition that we are talking about? So it's not as challenging as looking for the Higgs bosons, but I know it's complicated. So these are the thank you.